All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from the borough of Queens in New York City. It is the 27th day of September, 2022. And I'll always like to thank you for listening to this show and making one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also, want to invite you to continue sending along whatever comments you have about this show. Send them to questions4taylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com. And, of course, we do want to thank our sponsors because without them, we would have no show. This week's sponsors, Irving Resources, Novo Resources, Aloro Resources, Reyna Gold Mining, Timberline Resources, and Lion One Metals. I've titled today's show, Is Inflation Turning Hyper? Bob Moriarty, Michael Oliver, and Quentin Henning are this week's guests. Alistair MacLeod, in his September 15th weekly essay, it was titled, Inflation is Turning Hyper, suggesting that, in fact, the die is cast and there's very little, actually nothing, that can be done now to keep us from heading into a hyperinflationary event. Of course, the notion that the dollar could ever hyperinflate is nonsense to masses of Americans who have been trained to put their faith in a human god named the Federal Reserve rather than the creator of the entire universe. And indeed, so far, this little god has been able to keep inflation in check. Well, we're having a little bit of it now, but nothing like a hyperinflation. And they've been able to do that for several decades, even since we've gone off the gold standard in 1971. Except for the 1980s, which got really serious and was tamed by Paul Volcker's tight monetary policies then. But the Fed even has more recently cried about not having enough inflation, and they were suggesting that we should really shoot for at least a 2% or about a 2% level of inflation, as if they knew that they're omniscient enough to know how much the interest rate should be. So they actually believe that a little bit of inflation is a good thing. We've heard the Keynesians say that repeatedly. Well, as a 75-year-old man, I was a young person the last time we had that severe inflation back in the 1970s when Chairman Paul Volcker, well, he was named as a Federal Reserve chief by President Carter. He orchestrated a very harsh, Republican-unfriendly monetary policy, just as Ronald Reagan was taking the White House. That resulted in the deepest recession in the United States at that time since the Great Depression. Of course, since then, thanks to massive monetary stimulus by the Fed, we've had booms and busts that have made the 1980s downturn look tame by comparison. But in any event, the Fed, led by Paul Volcker, was able to reverse an accelerating inflation problem, and in so doing, pave the way for Americans to put their financial houses in order and have a couple of decades of pretty good growth and prosperity. But the Fed, which is not supposed to be political, couldn't resist over those years the temptation to win friends in government by creating massive amounts of money, which, by the way, unlike a gold or silver-based monetary system, is manufactured with liabilities. It's not an asset-based currency like gold or silver. So once gold was eliminated from money back in 1971, debt to GDP in America began to explode such that it is now around 130% of GDP. That compares with just 35% when Paul Volcker slammed the monetary brakes on in the 1980s. Now, with so much leverage in the global monetary system, the probability of a global financial collapse is much greater than at any time since the Great Depression. That is what makes the job of the current Federal Reserve so much more difficult than what Paul Volcker faced in 1980. The title of Alastair MacLeod's September 15th essay was Inflation is Turning Hyper, as I noted, which, it may, again, may seem like nonsense given the collapse in stock and bond prices over the past few weeks and a dollar that has been increasingly strong compared to the euro, the yen, and the pound. But I'm reminded of a conversation I had years ago with Congressman Ron Paul on this show. When I was arguing with Ron that deflation was more of a threat than inflation, Ron observed that inflation and deflation are two sides of the same fiat monetary, the fiat money code, coin. The same side, two sides of the same fiat money coin. In other words, the threat of deflation results in an inflationary response. And since that discussion with Dr. Paul many years ago, the severity of both extremes has become ever greater, thanks to the insane and immoral issuance of trillions of dollars out of thin air by the god of money, the Federal Reserve. Well, Bob Moriarty will join me in the second half of today's show to discuss his views on inflation, deflation, and perhaps draw some comparisons with the German hyperinflationary event that led to the rise of Hitler. The events of that horrific episode of the 20th century history is outlined brilliantly in the book that Bob Moriarty was instrumental in having translated from German to English. The title of that book is The Monetary Revelation. Bob talked about it previously on the show, and we'll probably be talking about that book some more in future episodes. Well, Quentin Henning is scheduled to provide an update on the evolving gold exploration program in Japan, on which Irving Resources is teaming up with Newmont Mining and Sumitomo to develop. Now, I would suggest that if you are an investor in junior gold exploration stocks, you may want to pay attention, especially now that the junior explorers have been hit extremely hard. You can buy them really at fire sale prices, no doubt about it, and some really good companies making great progress towards establishing large gold and silver deposits in the ground. So Quentin Henning will be with me right after our first commercial break, but right now I'm really happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is here once again. It's olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com, to check into Michael's excellent service, and really you should consider subscribing. Thank you for joining me again, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
It's really good to have you. I have been following your work now for a number of years, Michael, and I have seen how many times, time and time again, price chart technicians would have me, they would have had me selling out of gold just before it was ready to take off. And your momentum work and structural analysis, momentum and structural analysis has really kept me in gold without being triggered in and out at the wrong times. Can you talk a bit about how you came to devise your proprietary model and perhaps give us some examples of how well it has worked at some key turning points over the last number of years, perhaps dating all the way back to 1967, which is when I think you you created this model?
Well, yeah, I was a futures broker starting in 1975 with E.F. Hutton in New York, their headquarters commodity division. That's when gold was legalized. Literally several blocks away from the Hutton building. Mm-hmm. I stayed as a futures broker up through 1992, but in 1987, I was living in Scottsdale, Arizona at the time. I had a bunch of clients, and then I was doing analysis of momentum sort of in a primitive way at that time, rather than looking at price charts, which is the way I'd been educated about technical analysis, is, you know, plot price charts and trend lines and stuff. I did the same thing, but I did it with momentum charts, meaning I would plot the bar, the high-low close of a month, let's say, and plot it in relation to a moving average, meaning how much above it or how much below it. So I create an oscillator. Mm-hmm. Not just simply overlay a moving average on a price chart. Any idiot can do that, and it doesn't mean too much. But when you do it, when you create an oscillator of the price action related to a moving average, you end up with a different picture quite often, especially if you're looking at longer-term stuff. It's significant because in 1987, we were having a nice run-up in the market. Stalled in the spring and summer of 87, like it was trying to top, and then it burst to a new high in August. Like, oh boy, it just broke out. In fact, it was a replica of 1929, in fact. And then in September, it started to slip. And then a new quarter turned around, because the fourth quarter started in October. Well, when I calculated my three-quarter moving average momentum chart, meaning plotting each monthly bar in relation to the three-quarter average, which is sort of like a 200-day, okay, try not to confuse you here. But when I look, you look at a price chart, it was just an upward curving arc. You know, you could hardly draw a valid trend line on it. It was hard to define. It was so strong. But when you plotted a momentum chart, you could go back a couple of years, and you would see both an uptrend line that was highly well-developed and a flat floor on the oscillator that came through at the three-quarter average, such that in about the first week or so of October, 87, you broke those structures. Now, when you looked at price at that time, no big deal. It was having a pullback. In fact, it looked like it was pulling back to support, but momentum said, you're dead. Well, I put on put positions for myself, and I urged my clients, and they did too, and we caught the crash. Okay, it didn't take long. It took like a week. Mm-hmm. Okay, huge event, 35% in about a week.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't have a lot of money back then, nor did I have a huge position, so I made a huge percent gain, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't change my life, but it mm-hmm. changed my life in a way that I said, hey, I got to do more work on this. You know, I've got to develop this. And by 1992, I developed basically all the tools I thought I could derive from this methodology. And lo and behold, I got institutional clients who were eager for the research from that. Mm-hmm. We branched out to retail subscribers in 2016, I think it was. But prior to that, it had always been institutional. And our methodology basically has stayed the same since 1992. Mm-hmm. A few new additions. It's just a matter of the markets changing, you know. And there's a problem with the recent gold drop in terms of our being able to be long-term bearish, like so many people are. Think it's going to collapse off the page and all this. Mm-hmm. And that's because they're looking at a price chart. Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, this is just like the 2011-2012 top. In 2013, you crashed and you went to hell. Okay. The price charts may look the same, but momentum does not. And we put out a report this past weekend dealing with that big issue. It's quite a laborious report, very wordy on our part. Normally we're more full of charts. And anyway, what I tried to explain was why can't MSA be long-term bearish or gold? And that report mm-hmm. deals with that issue. Mm-hmm. And rather than going into it right now, I suggest that anybody who might be interested go to our website, olivermsa.com, and click on Contact. And you'll see my lovely picture there. Below it is my email address. Send me an email, and I'll send you that report. It's quite long, but it does explain our methodology and why we could be bearish in gold 3 months off the high in 2012 and stay bearish, turn bullish 2 months off the low in 2016, and yet here we are two years plus off the high, and now everybody wants to get bearish. Uh-huh. Or not. Yes, the intermediate trend is negative. There's no question about that. Meaning, since March, for example, it's now 6 months of, you know, with down, 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 down. But the long-term trend is not. And we cannot join in the chorus of people who think gold's just going to fall apart here and it's no good and it's going to join the stock market, et cetera, et cetera. We don't think so. Our technicals argue something quite the contrary, and I think this report deals with that, and it might be of interest to your listeners.
Well, that's very generous of you, Michael. Thank you. Thank you for this. OliverMSA.com. Click on the contact page, and then your email address, and send an email to you, and request this chart. Report, your weekend report. That is dated, I think that was on Sunday, right? It was
It was Sunday, yep. And, it's lengthy, and so, you know, be prepared to sit down and read, and a lot of charts to go with it to explain it. But anyway, so we're not MSA, unlike so many even technical reports, which have now shifted negative. Why are they negative? Because you made a low in March of 2021 at 1670 and change. Mm-hmm. You rallied. You came back down in August of 2021, made a low in the 1670s and rallied. You mm-hmm. came back down in July of this year into the high 1600s and rallied. And now, last week, you finally broke through those three very obvious prior lows.
Right.
So it's got to be a collapse, right? Well, we argue not. I think likely will be like October of 2008, where gold very briefly participated with the stock market and then turned around and exploded. I think
now, Michael,
where we are.
If you saw a similar pattern in your momentum charts, then you would be bearish, probably.
Yes, I would, but don't have that situation. There's too many attributes of the current decline that say, no, do not trust it to sustain.
Mm-hmm. And, all right. Well, that was that was then. What are you seeing now then? I guess what you're seeing is the potential you just said, something closer to 2008 potentially.
Yeah, I think it's more likely to turn out like 2008. In fact, we have the price chart of what happened in 2008 in October, where gold had a crashed-like event in sympathy with the stock market. But
right.
It only lasted a month, and then it totally divorced and exploded. Was back
I remember
to its highs
well.
Within, back to its highs within 3 months, and then proceeded to go from a low at 670 to 1900 by 2011. And meanwhile, the stock market continued down after that October 2008 sell-off until March of 2009, while gold was making new highs.
Absolutely.
And two, took 3 years to get back to its high for the stock market. So gold is different.
Yeah, I remember it well. Now, I know my engineer is telling us our time is up, but I want to ask you one more thing here. This morning, in the morning note, Art Cashin wrote, and I quote, this afternoon should be of interest. Keep your eyes on the yields. The question is, should we punch through above 3.77% on the 10-year, which would put pressure on things or more down to 3.7, which might help the bulls. But the game is on the table, and I was just looking at we're close to 4% now. I mean, it's 3.95 or something like that last I checked today on the 10-year. What are you seeing in the 10-year, let's say you look at the long bond, what are you seeing for long-term?
We look at all kinds of scales, TLT, which is an ETF of 20-year plus, 30-year bonds, down. I think there's more to go in this particular decline, meaning higher rise in yields in this particular route in the bond market. Mm-hmm. Also, there are going to be consequences. I'm talking fundamental headline-type consequences, probably a lot of it showed up in the financial sector. Also, the strong dollar, which I think they are probably starting to intervene, is my suspicion, given what's happened over the last few days. It's becoming a crisis situation in terms of financial stability, and I'm not just talking about emerging market countries. We're now talking about the UK with the British pound, the euro, and the yen. We're getting some chaos there. Now, you can say, well, that's bearish for gold. Well, the correlation, and this is something we dealt with in that report as well, between the dollar index and gold is sometimes good and sometimes totally bad. Right now, it's inverse. There's no question. But we suspect that this dollar upside is about to peak, and I don't trust it to sustain. And if it doesn't, its downturn will be rapid. Now, that may be part consequence of intervention. I'm not sure. But I think gold sniffs that out, and it knows that ultimately when all this swirling is going on in all the financial markets negatively, it is the ultimate benefactor.
Well, of course, you know, you've talked many times in the show about two places to go when the equity markets get hammered really hard would be the treasuries and gold. The treasuries off the table now. If we're in this massive bear market in treasuries, people are gonna, I mean, actually, people in the bond market have been hit harder than in the equity market so far this year.
No, and the muni bond market is in disastrous shape, and I suspect that's going to create a real problem, especially when you get into the tax year next year where revenues, there's no more capital gains, period, folks. It's over. Take that money, haircut right off the tax revenue of the federal, state, and local governments. You're going to have problems with city governments and state governments funding themselves, not to mention pension funds. So the central bank's got a real problem that they help prick by pricking that bubble. And the bubble they pricked is the inflation of the paper assets.
Yeah, well, they created it.
They created a bubble and they pricked it. And they thought they were stopping commodity inflation. What they did is they stopped paper asset inflation.
Quite
a dangerous event.
Yeah, I would say so. And I have to think that high yield debt is in big trouble even more so, or should be one of the leaders down, I would think, and probably shorting some of those if there's some...
There's no place to hide. See, that's the problem
no place
with portfolio managers. They used to be able to hide in the credit markets.
Treasures.
And now, you know, they're getting killed.
Right. So ultimately, gold should be the beneficiary of this. And of course, there's all kinds of things going on geopolitically. Only God knows how that's going to all work out. But Michael, I want to thank you once again. Always great to have you. It's so important. And we thank you very much for spending time
with
us.
Thank you, Jay.
All right, folks, we do have to go to break, but don't go away because Dr. Quentin Henning will be here to talk about Irving Resources. Very exciting story. Well, I don't know. I don't think the markets are very excited about it these days, but I think you should be. You might want to be if you're an investor in gold mining shares. So don't go away. Dr. Quentin Henning will be with us when we return.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barikoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.